Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, August 13th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The Sitka Assembly will consider whether or not to reinstate the Long-Range Planning and Economic Development Commission when it meets in regular session tonight. The ordinance to recreate the defunct commission is co-sponsored by two of the newer members of the Assembly, Matt Hunter and Michelle Putz. Sitka first created an Economic Development Commission in 1988. 11 years later, it was renamed the Long-Range Planning and Economic Development Commission. It was dissolved in February 2011. The move to terminate long-range planning was considered controversial. Members who testified at the time of its dissolution indicated that the body seemed to have no function anymore. At times in the past, the Assembly and the Commission disagreed on major issues like tourism planning. In the ordinance reinstating the group, the emphasis on economic development has been dropped in favor of strategic planning. If passed, the new name would be the Long-Range Strategic Planning Commission. The Assembly will consider the matter tonight on first reading, along with an ordinance to raise water rates and the possible sale of the South Benchlands to a developer. KCAW will provide live coverage of the meeting beginning at 6 p.m. The Tenneke School has been closed for this year, but residents of the Chichagof Island community hope to turn things around for the next. With only 3 local students enrolled, the Chatham School Board voted last week for closure, but that closure is temporary for now. The district will maintain the building and other school assets for the next 9 months. Tenneke residents, meanwhile, will be looking for a solution. KCAW's Robert Woolsey reports.
The Chatham School Board's vote on August 6th was a bullet that Tenneke has dodged before. 2 times in the last 27 years, the school's enrollment has dropped below 10, and the board decided to keep the school open. This year, Tenneke could muster 3 resident students and 2 foreign exchange students. Gordon Chu chairs Tenneke's advisory school board. It developed a 9-page plan to operate the school at a bare-bones level, but Chu says it was probably too little, too late to avert closure.
The thing that hurts us the most is that we came up with a pretty exciting reduced budget, going basically laying everybody off but the teacher, with all kinds of volunteers, and that there was some money in the district's reserve fund, but they decided to use it for a roof for a building in Angoon.
Scott Butterfield is the superintendent of the Chatham School District. He says student enrollment is down district-wide, and state funding is dropping as a result. He says the money wasn't there to keep Tenneke open with less than 10 students.
Our unrestricted fund balance is not such that even on a reduced basis, we would have much of any unrestricted fund balance left if we kept the school open for 1 year, and that if we had an emergency of some kind, we would have nothing to use monetarily to resolve that emergency. So they just didn't feel fiscally that it was a wise decision to use all of their unrestricted fund balance for 1 year to keep the school open.
The Tenneke School's budget is about $270,000 a year. The painful thing for the district, according to Butterfield, is that closing the school doesn't really represent a significant savings.
This is tough financially even with school being closed. We still have a tenured teacher that works in Tenneke. We are obligated contractually to employ that teacher somewhere. And so we've got that cost to bear, plus all the fringe benefits to cover. We probably have to hire somebody to work 1 hour a day, 5 days a week, or something like that, to check the building, make sure it's still secure, nothing has happened. We still have to maintain minimal heat. All of those costs are going to add up
to something on the order of $120,000. The tenured teacher, by the way, is Gordon Chu's wife, Ann Connolly. Butterfield says the district is going to keep everything in the school, all the supplies, electronics, and other equipment. If more than 10 students have filed an intent to enroll form by next spring, the school will reopen the following autumn. In spite of the close calls in the past, Tenneke has managed to deliver a good education for its students.
Small as they are, they have outstanding academic achievement. They've always made AYP, and even now when you go to the 5-star rating that the state has gotten with the new waiver from No Child Left Behind, Tenneke scored a 5-star rating. That's as high as it gets. Not many schools do that. So in that respect, having to close a school is sad.
10 students is an important bar for rural schools because that's where a multiplier kicks in the state funding formula. In a nutshell, 10 students are the financial equivalent of 39 students. That's why dropping below 10 becomes so treacherous. Tenneke has 3 kids enrolled for next year who will have to make other plans. There are 4 other students in Tenneke who have opted for homeschooling and chose not to enroll. Additionally, there were 2 foreign exchange students planning to enroll. That all still adds up to only 9. The Chatham School Board discounted Tenneke's plans to have exchange students, saying the funding priority should be on residents. Gordon Chu believes Tenneke is on the right side of state statute by boosting enrollment through exchange students, but his board does not want to split hairs over that issue. Instead, the focus now, again, is on community and what that means. Tenneke has a significant number of vacation homes, only about 1 house in 10 as a year-round resident, Chu says. But there are still compelling reasons to have a school.
It is a very different mix, and yet there are many people, retired professors, for example, who believe in education and believe that that a town is not really a village without children. And we're very worried about the people that aren't, our families that aren't capable of homeschooling or aren't interested in homeschooling because this decision just happened a couple of days ago, and they're all trying to decide what to do, whether to move or not, which will complicate any possible reopening issues in the spring.
If the Tenneke school remains closed for 24 months, Chu says the $4 million building, which occupies city land, may revert to city ownership. That is not an attractive prospect given the expense of basic maintenance. Chu says the goal now is to get to 10.
We've been in this position before, and the really impressive thing, I think, is that with our outreach to bring families here and to increase our employment base and to increase our student count has largely been successful over the last 8 years that I've been on the board. We've kept the school open against all odds.
Tenneke has made successful recruitment efforts in the past, a fire chief and his 2 kids, for example, based on the lifestyle the town offers. He says creative problem solving is where we're at right now. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Petersburg Borough Assembly is not happy with the state's response about its plans for spraying herbicides along the state roadways in the area. The Assembly last week decided to draft a second letter voicing opposition to herbicides used by the Alaska Department of Transportation for keeping road signs and airport land free of trees and shrubs. Joe Vicknicki reports.
A June 17th letter from the borough prompted a July 9th response from the DOT's statewide maintenance and operations chief, Michael Coffey. In that letter, Coffey writes, the state will notify the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation and give 30-day public notice when the DOT plans to use herbicides in Petersburg's borough. That response did not satisfy Assemblymember John Haverlick.
To me, this gentleman's letter was basically, we know best, so we're going to do what we want. And I don't feel they do. It's our roads, our fish, you know, our streams, our water, you know, our berries, whatever.
Haverlick wanted to threaten legal action to stop state spraying. The DOT no longer needs a DEC permit for spraying on state lands, a regulation change approved this year. Under the new regulation, the agency is required to publish what's called an integrated pest management plan, which outlines how herbicides could be applied along roadways across Alaska. The DOT published such a plan back in June. The plan covers the entire state and it gives the general idea for herbicide use. It says, quote, DOT intends to begin using herbicides as a maintenance tool along with non-chemical maintenance and vegetation control measures following the required posting and notification requirements, unquote. DOT's plan says the use of herbicides will save the state money. It identifies several chemical herbicides that may be used along roadways, Aquamaster, Roundup, Habitat, and Garlon 3. At a meeting in June, Petersburg's Assembly discussed drafting a local ordinance to prohibit spraying by the state. Assembly member and attorney John Hogue wondered whether a local ordinance would be able to block state spraying. Retired state fisheries biologist and former city councilor Barry Bracken asked the assembly to draft the first letter and was also disappointed in the response.
I don't know whether, you know, threatening legal action against the state is the right way to go, or whether you need to kick it up a level and consider drafting an ordinance. Assemblyman Hoag pointed out, the legislature could overturn that if they so choose. I'm not sure that they would do that, but it seems to me like sitting here and doing nothing with a response like that certainly does not reflect the views of the community, as I understand them.
And Assembly Member Hoag, attending by phone Monday, recommended a second letter to the state.
I would recommend, as a matter of fact, I'll make a motion that the borough send a letter along the lines of Mr. Bracken's statement that we were disappointed in the response that the state has, and ask them to see if they can give us some assurances that they really won't be spraying here. I would recommend that the letter not discuss the local powers versus the state, and I think it's premature to threaten litigation.
Petersburg sent its first letter of opposition to other municipalities. Officials in Skagway and Haines expressed similar concerns. Borough staff will draft a second letter to be considered by the Assembly at a meeting August 9th. In Petersburg, I'm Joe Vicknicki.
And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. And here's a look at Sitka's own weather. Today it's going to be mostly cloudy with areas of low clouds and fog in the morning. Highs around 63. Tonight, mostly cloudy with lows around 54. Southwest wind 5 miles per hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Wednesday, mostly cloudy with highs around 68 and lows around 56. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka.